Blog Talk Radio.
Well, good afternoon, everyone, and thank you for joining us today at Gold Radio Cafe. It's June 22nd, 2012, and welcome to the program. This is the Gold and Silver Financial Review, and today we can reach us by email for any questions, and the email is mail, M-A-I-L, at centralmetalscorp.com. Our website is www.centralmetalscorp.com. Our phone number is 519-915-7542. Again, this week we have our special guest, Mr. Jeff Dunphy. He's going to be joining us. We're going to be discussing some headlines on the market and looking at what's going on in gold and silver and some political news around the world. Jeff, I'd like to welcome you to the program again.
Good afternoon, Bosco. Delighted to be here.
Great. We're going to start off. I'm just going to give our listeners some quotes here. Let's see. We had the past couple of days a lot of volatility again in gold and silver. Gold was knocked down from its 1600 area, especially yesterday it was down at $1.50. Right now we have $1,565 for gold, that's spot gold, and for spot silver we have $2,680. For platinum, for those that are interested, is $1,434.78, and palladium is $607.80. So we've had quite a bit of volatility. Some of the biggest news, I guess, coming out this week was the Fed meeting. Bernanke came out and with a dovish stance, I guess. They aren't, I guess the idea is that they don't plan on doing any quantitative easing, but they did discuss, what do they call it now? They gave it another name. Operation Twist. So, exactly. Jeff, you have any comments on Bernanke's testimony?
Well, I think as we have discussed in earlier programs, the Fed are in a pickle. They can't ever stop the quantitative easing because the mess they've got themselves in almost requires them to default into printing more money. So the fact that they've renamed it or changed the name to Operation Twist, I think, speaks a little to the critics who are saying, what are you doing? You're printing your currency into oblivion. So it is, from those on the inside out looking at it, it's a disguised mini QE3.
Mm-hmm. And I don't know what the correction in gold, typically gold and silver as a safe haven, should be going up. So obviously there is some manipulation somewhere. As we discussed last week on this program, manipulation is common in most markets, and governments around the world do strange things to benefit the elite, I guess you could say. Jeff, we've also have some other headlines. Did you have any headlines that you wanted to discuss today?
Well, I think one of the challenges that the banks are having right now is maintaining the norm. And I think what's also transpired, certainly in the collapse, the 2008 collapse of the banks in terms of the mortgage catastrophe, it came to light that the rating agencies were ranking all these banks high. They were ranking all these funds that were based on mortgage-backed securities high in terms of safe. And when they all collapsed, The regulatory boards looked at all the rating agencies and thumped them soundly with their Nerf bat. And consequently, we're now seeing the Moody's come out and downgrade a bunch of the banks, because a blind man on a galloping horse can see that these banks are sitting on a precipice of which they won't be able to recover from if, in fact, the calamity that we all are watching happen unfolds. They can print money till hell wouldn't have it, in order to save them, but that's the only thing that they have now. We hear the Bank of Canada say we aren't going to raise rates. They've just changed the mortgage parameters. They're saying no more 30-year mortgages. We're going to go to 25-year mortgages. So that's going to make a bit of a difference to the mortgage market. I suspect it will compromise it. It'll knock it down. But again, we're stepping into this place, both Europe and the States and China. I mean, every economy on the planet, where Japan has been for a while, and that is stagnation, where they can't lower rates enough in order to get things growing. It is, as we've seen for the last few years, it's becoming more and more detrimental to most people in terms of their value, other than commodities, I suspect.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, this is sometimes I discuss with my clients, regarding counterparty risk. You have, for example, investments in real estate. You have a mortgage, and so on. Especially now with the way that they chopped up the mortgages and sold them off in pieces, there's a lot of risk to the financial institution that is holding those mortgages. And in a lot of cases, people don't even know who actually holds their mortgage, and yet they're paying for it. I know in a lot of the hot real estate markets like California and South Florida and so on, people are being foreclosed on, and once they get to the courts, they have a hard time even figuring out who actually owns the mortgage, because it's been chopped up in so many different pieces and there's so many different owners to it. It's been spread around the world. And when you own gold or silver, that's it. You own it. It's in your hands. It's in your possession. There's no counterparty risk. So this is one of the benefits of investing in physical commodities, whether it be gold and silver or even oil and gas or other commodities.
That's exactly right. And they package these financial instruments up in such a fashion that because there was such a demand for them at a certain period of time, that the paperwork and the stream of information locking in the mortgage to the owner of the mortgage got lost in some cases, and there are some cases now where Mr. and Mrs. Wheatley want to pay their mortgage, they don't want to default on it, but they don't know who to pay to. So there's that calamity going on. And one of the things that the banking industry has become quite aware of, astutely aware of, over the last 15 or 20 years as the internet becomes more and more validated in terms of flows, is how do they control the flows, and how do the tax parties that need to collect tax, whether it's GST or VAT or whatever, how do the governments control commerce so that they can tax the commerce? If you will, there may be a point in time where the governments say, we don't know how money is being transferred. Certainly that's what's happening in Greece right now, where they're falling into the place of barter and of exchanging stuff. The government can't tax that, so consequently they're starting to see their revenues fall. So this becomes something of great import to the governments, because the governments have such entropy that they need to be fed. This is akin to the great big Venus flytrap in the Steve
right.
Martin that feed me, so the governments need to be fed. They're running into calamities where they don't have the revenues, they're running into economies that are slowing down, so consequently they can't pay, and they are so compromised by their economic and political agendas, by the lobby groups that they deal with, that it heads them into a place where there's a place of no return, if you will.
So historically, governments do this. I was actually watching a documentary last night regarding what happened to Chile and Argentina, and how the U.S. typically, in these cases when governments get into these positions, the result seems to be capital control, currency controls, and countries go into revolution. Is that where you think we might be heading, or?
Well, I think there's the lovely blog that we chatted about last week called Thundering-Herd, And one of the things that happens in this scenario is that the governments become so enmeshed in the people that buy them into power. And this is the lobby game and the fact that governments can be bought. And what we do with jaded perspective is we look at various governments. We look at Argentina, and we look at Peru, we look at Chile, we look at all these governments, and we poo-poo the methodology, which is exposed to us, on how they get into power and then how they manipulate the system for their own selfish needs. And we think, oh my, isn't that unfortunate and isn't that horrible? And boy, when their country goes, I mean, when the Peróns got finished with Argentina, Argentina was one of the power horses of the globe, and when the Peróns got finished with it, it was a catastrophe. And it's just now starting to get back on its feet. A short period of time ago, in the last 10 years, they were on their knees. So, yes, we see selfishness invariably collapses things, compromises things, and hands things into some nasty bits, right? Jonathan Kay, in an article this morning called The Best Government Money Can Buy, wrote an interesting article about economic and political agendas. And, you know, the premise of it is that often, if not always, are the decisive issues in making legislature, right? And an interesting optic in this article was shocking, and that was there are 15, this was in 2009, which is the latest data they have. In October of 2009, there were 1,537 lobbyists registered in D.C. for the financial institutions.
Wow.
This was 25 times what the number was that supported consumer groups and unions and other proponents of reform. So imagine, if you will, you have an army promoting your agenda, and your agenda is maniacally self-serving. This is what we have rampant in the world right now. We look at other countries and think, poo-poo. We think the Greeks are unique in this. And now we think Spain is, and then we think Italy is. In the whole fiasco of Berlusconi in Italy, everybody looked upon and went, my goodness. But it's naive to think that this silliness, this self-serving stuff doesn't happen everywhere. And it's also silly to think that these guys aren't smart enough to figure out how best to get themselves out of it or to mitigate their losses. They see that the currencies are collapsing. We see, I mean, you and I were chatting a little while ago, Bosco, that both the Russian Central Bank is buying a bunch of gold, China's buying, India's buying. Mm-hmm. There's a whole bunch of these going long commodities. There's a reason for this, right? And we, I think we also made reference to a little article by a guy named Raoul Paul, who's it's a research service, and it's called the Global Macro Investor, and he's written quite a scathing article called The End Game, that basically says the world has no engine of growth, with most of the G20 countries approaching stall speed at the same time, and his final conclusions are the markets are imminently going to collapse, which is part of the normalcy bias that we dealt with last week. Everybody wants things to just bounce back, but we are not alone in this perspective, and things are very trepidatious.
So
gold and silver,
I mean,
are becoming more and more valid, right?
Right. I mean, that's a pretty bleak picture. I mean, I know this program, we've always, you know, we look at the negative issues around the world, but these are the facts people need to understand. And I mean, we have a solution for you. We have a way that you can protect yourself. Nobody wants to go that route. It's not a good thing for anybody when we enter into a condition of this nature. But I mean, the facts speak for themselves. So what is there light at the end of the tunnel, Jeff? Or like, is there a way that this can be fixed, or is it one of those situations where we have to go through the pain? It could be violent, and there could be a lot of social unrest, but at the end of the day, the people that brought this problem to us will have to be either disciplined or put in jail, or What is the end game here? What are we looking at?
Well, interestingly, this genre of talk is generally poo-pooed by the the self-serving cognoscente as catastrophizing or as conspiracy theorists. Mm-hmm. However, let's ask a very germane question, and that is this: will the little people globally happily go along with being compromised in every capacity for long enough? I think what has transpired over this last little bit is a bunch of people are standing up and going, this is unreasonable. How is it that you are printing your way out of debt? How is it that you are borrowing your way out of debt? It's an interesting methodology. So the question is, are you prepared to be compromised in perpetuity by the, we call them banksters perhaps, but are you prepared to be compromised in perpetuity by the banksters? If in fact that answer is yes, then we may be able to continue this facade for a given period of time. Now, the optimist in me says, my opinion and my perspective is this system is broken. So it needs to be replaced with a system that is less compromised by self-serving agendas. It needs to be a system that is built for the whole and the betterment of all, rather than completely gamed and compromised for the wealth creation of the few. These are big questions.
Yeah.
Is a system that serves everybody and is in everybody's best interest better than one that serves a few? Well, in my opinion, it is. But those are big questions.
Right. And a lot of, I mean, I discuss sometimes with my clients how this all started and where this all, you know, and I refer back to, I believe it was in the late 90s when Clinton was still president, they repealed the Glass-Steagall Act, which allowed commercial banks, the Glass-Steagall Act was created after the Depression or the crash in 29, and it did not allow commercial banks and investment banks to work as one. Well, Bill Clinton, in I believe it was 1999, he repealed the Glass-Steagall Act, and they introduced the, what is it called, Graham-Leach-Bliley Act, I believe. I might be incorrect on that, but so this allowed the commercial banks and investment banks to, I guess, commingle clients' funds. So it's not typically a banking system where you deposit your funds and the bank lends out money to people who want to borrow money for mortgages or for businesses and so on. They were allowed to take your money and go speculate with it. This, you know, is it, would one step in the right direction be to reinstate Glass-Steagall, you think?
Well, interesting. I mean, I think there's a certain aspect of the regulation of honesty that has proven over and over and over again to be completely impossible. That there is no methodology and manner by which you can write legislation to regulate honesty. And I think Kyle Bass said it quite interestingly.
Hello?
A little while ago. Are you still there? Can you still hear me?
Yeah, you cut out for a few seconds. I just wanted to let our listeners know I'm broadcasting today from a remote location in Florida, and we're on a wireless system here, so we might have some technical difficulties, but we'll continue. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Jeff.
No worries. So part of the methodology by which the markets have evolved over the last 10 or 20 or 30 years, certainly from the Reagan and Thatcher era, was there was a push, which everybody embraced at the time, and there was a push away from government managing things, and there was a push towards deregulation so that everybody could plug themselves into a marketplace that was not government manipulated, and this is how they sold it. Now, ideally, this is not a bad idea, but what really did happen, and this is in the Clinton era when he started to push further into the deregulation methodology, was that the fiscal power, the financial power of these institutions, they started to merge banking and insurance and brokerage, and what is referenced as the Chinese wall between them got to a place where they were, again, acting in this maniacally self-serving fashion. So
Right. It
goes back to, I mean, it started with the development of what's called the Federal Reserve Bank in the early 1900s when the bankers got together and formed basically a banking cartel. And this is wonderfully elucidated in a book called The Creature from Jekyll Island. And it basically talks about how the banks got together, formed a little cartel, and then how they did it is they formed to lend money to the governments. And this is how the creation of the fractional reserve system, the borrowing from the Federal Reserve, created a scenario where these banksters basically said to the governments, we're too big to fail. We've heard that phrase over and over and over again. Mm-hmm. We're now in this place where we have literally a handful of banks that have hundreds, if not trillions of dollars of revenue flowing through them, that everybody is terrified that they will collapse. So yes, we have a lot of financial power in the hands of a few, and to assume that the hands of the few are looking out after everybody's best interests is naive on one hand, and it's perilous on the other, okay?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, and I think...
Let me put a numeric aspect on this, and this again is from Ralph Paul's presentation, The End Game. Okay, mm-hmm. One of his slides stipulates the problem is not so much government debt per se. The real problem is that the $70 trillion in government debt is the collateral for $700 trillion in derivatives. This is what these banksters have done and played with, these trading the derivatives. Yep. That equates to 1,200% of global GDP.
Wow.
And it rests on a whole bunch of economies that are precipitously close to collapse. And when everybody gets this, they start to run to the bank. It's what's happening in Greece. It's what's happening in Spain. And it is a place where everybody wants to make sure that nobody gets too upset. Because if they do get upset, there's a run on things, and this $700 trillion in derivatives, nobody has the money to pay that back.
Mm-hmm.
So one of his slides basically says, from an EU crisis, we have only to join one dot for a UK crisis, and then what do you think, Japan, China, and then about what the US? This is the end of the fractional reserve banking system and of fiat money. It's the big reset. This is right out of a presentation, not mine, again. So one of the things that Kyle Bass mentioned in one of his conversations was, remember when Bernie Madoff finally came clean?
Yep.
Bernie Madoff and whatever it was, $50 or $60 billion worth of a Ponzi scheme, he came clean because more money was going out than was coming in. That has been happening for time. There will be a point in time where a reckoning will have to take place, and people will have to say, shucks, the governments can't support us. They can't pay our Medicare. They can't pay our retirement. They can't pay any of this because they don't have the money. This isn't something that is going to happen. This is something that we are in the middle of happening. And it's a bit precarious is probably a kind word. It is... disconcerting in the biggest sense.
Mm-hmm. Now, I have these discussions with some other clients as well. When you have, again, those kind of conditions, that much trillions of dollars in debt and so on hanging over the head of all these governments and economies. And you see how it affected some of these other nations, like what's currently happening in Greece and Spain, what happened decades
Argentina,
ago in Chile and Argentina. Yeah. Now, I've read... Yeah. Now, how is it that some of those countries, you know, this correction or this reckoning happened within a few years? The U.S. has been able to continue on this Ponzi scheme. I mean, it's been for probably almost a decade now. Is that because the U.S. is the world's reserve currency and they're able to manipulate and control other currencies around the world? I mean, imagine if China didn't have, I believe they have $1 trillion in reserve, of U.S. dollars, is this why it's taking so long for this reckoning to happen?
It's a great question, Bosco, and I think the unfortunate answer is that it's a multi-level answer. I mean, the first answer, this has been going on since the early 1900s when the banking cartels got together to game the system. So, and the underlying premise behind the way the Federal Reserve works is that inflation will be just a way of life. So that we've had inflation forever. And if you have inflation forever, contrary to the laws of cycles, what you have is a devaluation of a currency. Mm-hmm. Over the last 10 or 20 years, as you said, we have seen countries go into calamity, if you will, and we've seen countries that are marginally contributive to the big GDP picture, if you will. We now have countries that are not marginally contributive to the GDP picture of the world. Now, the next aspect of that is the U.S. dollar is the reserve currency for the planet. And as such, everybody has to agree that it's the reserve currency of the planet. Now, interestingly, the U.S. dollar became the reserve currency of the planet after the British Empire handed the torch to the Americans. Okay, so the British Empire started to weaken in the late 1800s. The first war brought it to its knees, and the second war brought it to its back. And consequently, it handed the torch to the U.S. economy, the U.S. military, and the U.S. geography, if you will, the U.S. the girth of the states. So
right.
We are now in this place where people, and the Chinese are starting to do this in small portions, but they're starting to say, we wish to transact with trading partners in the yuan or the renminbi. And when that happens, that is the declaration, albeit small right now, it does get headlines, but it's the declaration of the passing of the torch of, or the losing of the reserve currency status of the U.S. dollar. We're now starting to see conversations happening in the IMF. We're starting to see conversations happening where everybody knows that the currencies are being compromised. The Chinese are terrified. As you pointed out, they have 1 or 1.2 or 1.3 trillion of U.S. debt. It's one of the reasons they're over here spending U.S. dollars as fast as they can over here in North America. And the reason they're doing that is because they know that the currency is being devalued. So they're going to come here and buy things that are real, sound, land, property, commodities. They're buying mining companies. They're buying oil and gas companies. They're spending money over here as fast as they can because they know that the value of the currency that they're about to spend now is devaluating dramatically. Is there a place where somebody's going to stand up and say the emperor has no clothes? We expect so. This is part of your function here in carrying out this broadcast, and it's part of our advisory capacity to point out that there is systemic risk here, okay? And this isn't a stock market correction risk. We talk about systemic risks, okay?
Right.
And it's prefaced by what they'll start to do is the markets will get weak, so they'll say, yeah, we're going to stop short selling on bonds and possibly short selling on stocks, and we'll, again, this is part of the pan out of we've got to protect the boat. And what's happened then is then we'll have commodities, currencies being more valuable than, not currencies, we'll just have commodities more valuable than anything else because nobody will have any faith in the fiat money that's floating around.
And this, I mean, it's one of the individuals, I mean, you don't hear discussions like this on mainstream media practically at all, but the only person I've seen that's even allowed to discuss something like this is Jim Rogers. I think it was last week, and he's been saying for a long time now to let these banks go bankrupt. He doesn't believe in too big to fail. He says, let Greece go bankrupt and let Spain go bankrupt and let these big banks go bankrupt. When they go bankrupt, sure, it'll hurt for a little while. There'll be some pain, but in the long term, it'll be better for the economy. Because when the company goes bankrupt, then the capable companies or countries or institutions will come in and pick up the assets and restart, you know, the right way. Instead of doing what they're doing is too big to fail, you lend them money and they continue doing on, continue the same policies that brought them into this bad situation to begin with. You know, so I don't see, you know, it's a big mess that we're in, and unfortunately, people, this is a period where I believe that people should just be going to safety. I mean, as the saying goes, it's better to be safe than sorry. Nobody ever lost their money being safe. Sure, you miss out on some gains if you're investing in a specific stock or something, but generally speaking, this is the condition around the world is where people should be looking for safety and being conservative, and commodities is the best way to do that, because you're basically, that's your cost of living. Commodities, the price of energy, the price of food, and so on. And one way to get exposure to those price fluctuations on the investment side of it is investing in physical gold and silver, and even mining and oil and gas stocks too, if you will. Now, you had some experience in the energy markets. Did you, in your experience, have you seen that the Chinese were buying up energy companies in Canada?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, the Chinese are in and have spent tens of billions of dollars in North America buying up commodities. Now, I want to address a couple of points that you brought up, because I think, again, they're quite pertinent and quite relevant to this discussion. Jim Rogers is a really smart guy, and he's made an enormous amount of money playing in the commodities market and playing in the options market. And he moved out of the U.S. because he thought that the U.S. methodology, but the fabric in which they organized themselves and governed themselves, was compromised. And he moved to Singapore. And his predisposition about letting these banks go bankrupt is a sound one relative to what should happen. So, you know, as you and I have discussed, and I think it's plain to see, it's not a question of if they go bankrupt, it's when. And it's not a question of how they go bankrupt, it's a question of what they will do as they're going, as they're, you know, flying into the mountain, right? There's a great analogy that I read once that goes like this. I mean, you jump off a cliff, and because the horizon is so far away, you do not know that you're falling, and you're flapping your arms, thinking that you're flying. And there is a point in time, as the free fall is happening, that you start to see that the horizon is starting to come up to you. And so what you do is you start to flap your arms more. And this is, in fact, what the governments are doing. They're just trying to print money to get them out of this hole. But in fact, it's sort of like when you find yourself in a hole, stop digging. What they're doing is they're printing their self into oblivion, much like flapping your arms to prevent yourself from falling into the ground. And that lends itself to stupidity. I mean, that's just ridiculous. But they don't have any other method. They don't have any other method to approach this, but for, and historically, when certain things happen, with the collapse of the Weimar Republic, what happened then is, oh, we started another war. It's when the Second World War started to further. So there may be the implication or the incentive to start a war somewhere to take everybody's attention away from and the financial calamity that's happening. Should the banks go bankrupt? All the guys who own the banks are going to be going, well, no, not on my watch. And what, as soon as they start to do that, all of these people will be running to gold and silver. It's just inevitable. They aren't dumb people. They know the game plan, right? They're just trying to gain the system to the best of their ability before it does collapse.
Okay, on a closing note here, some of the concerns a lot of my clients have are confiscation. And I tried to explain to them that, okay, we understand that the U.S. Attempted to confiscate gold in the 1930s, but however, back then, the dollar was still backed by gold, and they needed the gold to pay off their debts to France. And in 1971, Richard Nixon took the dollar completely off. He closed the gold window, so no debt was repayable in gold, if you will. What, I mean, it's never happened in Canada, and what do you think, is that a possibility? Do you think, to me, it doesn't make sense. The governments or authorities, I don't think they're going to be going knocking door to door to ask for people's gold. And even in the 1930s, the fact is, they said that less than 15% of the people actually turned in their gold. Once people go to physical gold, I mean actually holding it either in a safe or in a vault or at home, physically owning the gold, not the paper contracts or certificates or whatever. Do you think that there's a chance that the government of Canada or the U.S. would attempt something like that again?
Well, again, there's two aspects of that, of the answer to that question. And the first aspect is, from a pragmatic point of view, if any government wants to confiscate gold, the place to go to find the gold to confiscate is the big holders of it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? So if they do want to go and hold gold, they'll say, well, who holds gold, one, for people, or two, for large institutions?
Right.
And so what they'll do is they'll go around and they'll say, okay, well, they can probably touch, in Canada anyway, they can probably touch 85, 90, maybe 95% of all the physical bullion in the country by making one, two, three dozen phone calls, maybe 100 phone calls. So if you only have to touch 100 points to find the gold, why touch a million points to find, you know, 5% of the gold when you can touch all of the gold by calling 100 people, right?
Right.
So the gold, will they confiscate gold? It's not an unreasonable likelihood. Will they confiscate your 10, 20, 50, 100 ounces of gold? Well, it's less likely because they can go and talk to Brinks, for example, or they go and talk to Scotiabank, for example. They can go and talk to people and say, we're going to walk in and take your institution over, by the way, because it's failed, and we're just going to take everything in it, which means your paper money in the Scotiabank will be worthless. So when you put your bank card in, it'll just say, sorry, we're closed. So there is ways that they can go and touch that gold. Now, let's not underestimate the manner in which governments will not be interested in your well-being. So just like they did previously, there will be potentially a confiscatory legislature put in place. And if that's the case, be mindful of that. That's being prepared. That's just being prepared for something that is a potential possibility.
Right. I tell people, you know, it's still, you know, chances of that happening, nobody knows for sure, okay? But you're definitely much safer owning physical gold than being in the equity markets or virtually any other investment right now. Of course, each situation is different, and it depends on what's suitable for you, so I'm not saying that generally for everyone. But majority of the people, you know, if you're looking for safety, you're looking somewhere for long-term value, gold and silver is practically the best place to be right now. And if confiscation does come up, well, chances are that we'll, you know, hopefully hear about it before it happens, and then people can, you know, take measures or liquidate their position and go to cash or even go to other investments. I talked to a number of clients and people in the U.S. and you know, here in Canada, we regarding the firearms issue, it's kind of a, you know, we're very conservative here and we don't have firearms. But in the U.S., the attitude over there is anyone comes to my door looking for my gold, they're going to be met with my rifle. And this is how people think in America. They're, you know, I think that the fact is that there's more guns in America than there is people. basically. I mean, you go to some of these states like Michigan, Ohio, Indiana, where, you know, people are hunting, and you know, you can go in, the one person might have 10 guns in a house. So this is the attitude of people in those areas of the U.S. Guns, it's part of their you know, history.
Well, and I think this comes back to the question that we were addressing a little earlier in this conversation, and that is, are you prepared to let the few compromise your best interests for their own? And I think with the current level of media, the internet, the blogging, the Facebook and the Twitter and all of that stuff, we've seen countries go down because a whole bunch of people get together and say, no more of this. Yep. This country is being governed in a fashion that is inconsistent with the best interests of the many. Yep. And so, yeah, I do think that the Americans are very pugnacious when it comes to giving up their gold, but they actually did confiscate gold back in the day, right?
Mm-hmm.
I suspect that we now are sociologically at that place where we're not going to stand for that anymore.
Right.
And, I suspect that there will be a huge pushback. So, which gives me, the advisors to the government are going to get in and say, never mind going after the little guys, just go after the big guys.
Because
it's far easier, and they can go into the big guys if push comes to shove and things get really ugly. And we may see this in bankrupt countries that have already declared their bankruptcy. Many of them are already bankrupt, they just haven't made that declaration. But you may see military forces go in to do stuff like confiscate things.
I agree with you.
So when they want to touch a lot of gold, why spend an enormous amount of effort to get a little amount when they can spend a little effort to get an enormous amount?
Yeah, I completely agree. I mean, they'll go after the big institutions that are holding physical. I really doubt that anything like that would come about, but if they do, I think that makes sense for them to go that way. But anyways, Jeff.
Also keep in mind, we're almost done, I know, Bosco, but also keep in mind one really important thing to know. The government in any country, in any time, when the government has devalued their currency, which is one method by which they can reset things or change things, when a government has reset their currency, they've said, no, we're not, 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 right up till midnight.
Yep.
And then at 1 second after midnight, they say, yes, we are. So to think that they will give you any inclination that they will reset their currency is erroneous. It has not ever happened. Because it's in their worst interest to tell everybody they're going to devalue their currency, because that will start, what we chatted about, called a run on the bank. But it'll start a run on their currency. Right, so they will not give you any forewarning at all.
Mm.
It just is contrary to them, their interest, right?
Yeah, and anyway, this is, I think, a little bit relates to our discussion last week regarding Napoleon and the Rothschild Bank, what they did. It was, you know, a decision overnight. And even most recently in 2008, Lehman Brothers, when they went down, their CEO was up on CNBC till the last day saying that we have no problems, we're financially sound, and the next day they're being taken over, bankrupted. So it is difficult, people, it's a long-term investment, and unfortunately this is just a period in history where we have to be conservative and protect our assets until things can get straightened out, and it might take a long time because of the size of the problem and the debt that's floating around. This situation might last for a while, so people just have to adjust their standard of living, and hopefully we can get through this in one piece. Now, Jeff, did you want to leave our listeners with a way that they could contact you if they want to ask you some questions?
That would be fine, Bosco. I can be reached at the email address viatao@gmail.com for any of those who want to send comments or want to ask questions, and happy to receive that if that is of use to you.
Okay, so I also,
I also want to leave everybody with one thought before we go, because I think we've run to the end of our time, and that is, we are a very creative lot, humanity. We have been through these calamities before. The collapse or the reset of this system is imminent, in my opinion, and consequently, we will come out the other side of it, we trust, infinitely wiser, less manipulated and manipulatable, and with a system that will be more beneficial to the good of all. Let's just trust that that this collapse is, you know, it allows a new system to come in that is, you know, subject to the creative progression of the for the benefit of all. And it will come about. I mean, it's not a function of if, it's just a function of when.
Right. Very well. I'd like to leave it at, on that note. Jeff, thank you for joining us this week. We'll be in touch. Possibly you could join us again next week. We'll let our listeners know. And on that positive note, I want to thank everybody for joining us today. This program will be recorded and posted on our website at centralmetalscorp.com. And we will also have a link to Jeff's email. That's viatao, V-I-A-T-O, at gmail.com. We'll have a link to Jeff's email if anybody wants to ask Jeff any specific questions. So with that, again, thank you for joining us, Jeff, and have a great weekend.
My pleasure, Bosco. Thanks for the invitation.
Okay, goodbye.